This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Somehow it's 2025, and with that, you might be returning to paid work and starting to think about what that looks like. And that's exactly why we made the Ready or Not Go-To Guides. Tackling breastfeeding and returning to work, postpartum and return to work planning, and childcare 101, our guides are beautiful, easy to read, and filled to the brim with expert information. Take the guesswork out of returning to paid work and use the wisdom that we've learned from over 100 interviews with working mums. Get the guides now for $29 individually or $69 as a trio at readyornot.au. Estelle Greipink has one of those jobs that I can't help but admire. Because I can't figure out how she switches from mum mode, that is food-stained pants and wakeful nights and negotiating with a baby, to work mode, where no 2 days are the same and she has to somehow show up as an articulate, well-presented TV journalist covering court cases for Channel 7 News. And so I had to get her on to find out. She always wanted to be a mum, but conception didn't come easily. And before her baby would become a reality, she went through months of heartbreak, an autoimmune disease diagnosis, and unexplained infertility. But as much as she longed to be a mum, she was also scared about what pregnancy and motherhood would mean for her career. She saw it as a sort of signpost in her life that would ultimately hurt her future opportunities and progression. After fighting so hard for her baby, once she was in her arms, she was struck by the guilt that so many who go through fertility challenges and loss know. The question of why am I finding this so hard at times when this is all I ever wanted. Here, we talk about breastfeeding pressures and nap schedule fixations and what it meant for Estelle when she was able to give herself permission to breathe and find more joy. The imposter syndrome that she felt more so in motherhood than in work, and how she navigated the guilt that came with her recent work trip to Fiji. I'm Lucinda, this is Ready or Not, and here is the kind and keen-eyed Estelle Greipink. Estelle, in your line of work, I'm sure you've noticed the contrast of what it can be like to be on mat leave. Maybe boobs are leaking, recovering from birth in your postpartum track pants. And then all of a sudden, you're presenting as this incredibly articulate person on national television. I would love to hear how you felt that first day returning back to work, or maybe even more the anticipation of it, after having this very different experience of maternity leave.
Yeah, I think I took 12 months off and I flipped and flopped the whole time as to whether I wanted to go back to work or I didn't. It depended on the kind of day I was having with my child. But I feel like in the first, like those first few weeks of going back to work, I was like thriving. I was like, this is so good. I love this. But I think that was just like the initial excitement of something new. Once everything started settling in, you're starting to figure out you actually have two roles to play and you're trying to juggle everything in it. Can be quite daunting. So I don't know, like I feel like when I started, I was excited.
Yeah, you were ready.
I was ready, but then there were days where I felt like I can't do this. Like it's, and I feel like that's such a representation of motherhood, isn't it? Because you think that you know what you're doing and then curveballs just come where you go, I feel completely differently now.
Yes, that is so true. It's a walking paradox, motherhood. Let's take it back. I want to think of the Estelle that's finished school. Did you know you wanted to be a journalist or a reporter? What happens next?
So I'm such a type A personality and I feel like as an only child, I was always like seeking the approval of adults. When I was in year seven, I wrote like a little story about me and my year seven teacher wrote in the comments, like, have you ever thought of being a journalist? And I wish I had a better story for why I wanted to be a journalist, but honestly, one person in authority telling me I should do it, that sort of set me on my path. And then I just worked towards it. And now that's what I do. And I do love like talking to people, telling their stories. and that sort of thing. But yeah, that's my story.
Yeah. So did you study at university or did you go straight into a cadetship style thing? How did it all happen?
So I studied at RMIT, which this is going back over 10 years ago now. Back then, that was the way that you get into journalism, that you study really hard and you get into this quite difficult course.
I just missed out on that course, actually. So I know how difficult it was to get in. Well done.
Yeah. I mean, you look back now and you think, how funny is that, that we were all fixated on a score or an entry when journalism is a trade? You know, like, you are told if you get into this course, you will be a journalist. But really, the people that I've seen thrive in this industry, they didn't get the highest marks. They weren't the most studious. Like, the tools that you need in your toolkit to be a journalist actually have nothing to do with academia. And that's something that I actually struggled with, because I was such like a type A nerd sort of person, that once I left university and actually had to become a journalist and not be shy and go out and speak to people, I feel like that's when you actually learn how to do the job. So I got a cadetship in the country in Shepparton, which is about like 2 hours from Melbourne. And I started by writing about the country bake sale, or, you know, the cattle prices, or the crash on the road that everyone knows that road, and people who were injured in that crash, everyone knows, like, it's so local. So that's where I started. And then I ended up being able to come back to Melbourne, where I'm from, and eventually come to Channel 7, where I am now.
And so you're working very hard at this career. It takes you to another place for a few years. How are you feeling about motherhood at that time? Are you someone that's thinking about how on earth I will make this work well ahead of before you do it? Or was it a bit of a later thought for you of when you actually decided to fall pregnant, that's when you started to think about it?
I think I've always wanted to be a mum, and I laugh about this with my girlfriends now, because what I thought being a mum was is so different to what I fixated on for all of my 20s. I was like, I was made to be a mother. I will thrive when I'm a mum. And I'm not saying I don't love it, but it is just so different. So I met my husband when I was 20, and I was already sort of planning the stages of our life. When are we going to get engaged? When are we going to get married, have a child? So it's always been in the plan. We did have like a bit of an infertility struggle, which sort of made things drag out a little bit longer than I would have anticipated. But I actually feel like it's all worked in perfect timing anyway, because by the time I was able to fall pregnant, most of the girls in my friendship circle fell pregnant naturally. So we all came together, and I actually have a support system that I wouldn't have had otherwise.
Did you find navigating work challenging alongside trying to fall pregnant? Was that, like, I know when we look back with hindsight, we always think that timing ends up being divine, but was that a challenge to move through that at the time? Or do you think they felt like very separate things?
I am the ultimate multitasker. I think I look back and I'm like, how did I manage to do IVF while working full-time as a reporter? And I didn't tell a soul. My husband and I, and I'm not saying this is how anyone else should feel, but I definitely, going through IVF, felt a sense of shame at the start. And I guess that shame contributed to me not wanting to tell anyone for a long time. So we did IVF and almost 6 months of pregnancy without telling anyone. So it was just me and him, and I was going to blood tests and appointments and all kinds of things while also trying to work. And yeah, like, it was a lot. But I guess back in the day, you're just like, I have to do this. So yeah, I did it.
You just got through it. Yeah. And then you get to the stage where you're navigating pregnancy alongside work. What did that look like for you? Were you feeling good, or were you running off to the toilet bowl to be sick? What did that all look like?
Yeah, I am so fortunate I had a really good pregnancy. Like, I have this view that you can't have all three. You can't have the good fertility, conception, pregnancy and postpartum. Like, one of them's going to be a challenge. And I think that I lucked out with the pregnancy. For me, it was relatively straightforward. I guess working in TV, you are being filmed a lot. And for the longest time, I was trying to hide it, because personally, I felt like, I'll wait until 6 months because I need to know this embryo's stuck. You know, even though my OB kept saying, like, it's fine, there's a baby there. So I kept trying to hide it with big coats and all that sort of thing. But looking back, a lot of my cameramen have said to me, like, it was so obvious, we just didn't want to tell you. Like, we're filming your body head to toe, we can see there's a bump. So it was nicer than not to say anything.
Yeah, that's very respectful. I feel like a lot of people would be like, oh, you've obviously got a baby in there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good lesson to learn from the camera operators. When it came to telling your manager or your boss that you were pregnant, how did you feel about that? Because that's something that always lived rent-free in my mind as some really scary thing.
Yes, it definitely scared me. I guess in the point that I am in my career as well, like I think I was 31. And I still feel like I had so much I wanted to do at work. And I was scared that telling my manager that I was pregnant would be this signpost in my life of I am now a mum. I only do certain types of stories. I only work a couple of days a week. And I was worried about that. But my experience of telling my manager was actually really nice. I ended up like tearing up a little bit because I planned to just go in and tell him. But I actually walked in and said, I don't know if you knew, but I've been doing IVF and it worked. And he was really happy for me. And then I just felt lighter. And the fact, like, he said some really nice things to me too about how, like, at the end of the day, family is the most important thing. And that lifted some weight off my shoulders too, that I could do both. And I didn't feel like after I had announced that I was pregnant that my career in any way changed. Obviously, I hadn't had the baby yet, but it wasn't like what I had feared, that the day I announced I was pregnant, I would be viewed differently.
And so let's then cast your mind to meeting your baby. What do you recall most about early motherhood?
I found it really hard. And I think I found it so hard because I don't know if other people who have gone through a fertility struggle can relate, but so much of motivating yourself to get to that final point is telling yourself, I'm going to have these beautiful moments and it's all going to be worth it. And I guess I left no space in my mind to think about the hard times. So when I had my baby and, you know, I had a really straightforward birth and I had a great partner in my husband, but I just didn't prepare myself for the times that it would be hard. And that really hit me like a ton of bricks. I did have quite a colicky baby. We ended up being referred to the Royal Children's Clinic for Unsettled Babies, which validated me because I thought, am I just a first-time mum who thinks my baby's crying all the time? But the Royal Children's was like, no, which is pretty loud. But yeah, like I guess I found it quite a confusing and overwhelming time. And, you know, like I said, when you're in the infertility struggles, your motivation is all these beautiful moments, which I certainly had. I just wasn't prepared for all the moments where you're trying to feed and your milk's not coming in, or you just want to sleep and you can't because the baby's crying and things like that.
Was there a sense of guilt? I hear this a lot from people who have either experienced fertility challenges or they've experienced loss. And as you're saying, that motivating factor is there will be a baby eventually. Let's just keep going. It's going to be beautiful. Do you think there's a sense of guilt when it doesn't always feel as magical as we'd hoped?
Oh, I felt so guilty. I remember like crying to my husband in the early days, like how on earth can I be unhappy? Like how can I feel anxious or depressed? Like this is all I ever wanted. And I fought so hard for this little baby. And all those emotions together just feel so overwhelming. Plus you've got the sleep deprivation. Yeah, I felt super guilty for not loving every second of it.
And now you obviously have a little bit of that hindsight, which I think brings compassion for ourselves. How do you think you moved through that initially at the time? How do you think you, I guess, got yourself out of that, but also forgave yourself for not loving every moment? Because as we've learned, it's pretty impossible to love every single moment, even if you adore that baby more than anything.
Yeah, 100%. And when you talk about moving out of that phase, like for me, it took 4 or 5 months to move out of that phase into a space where I was like, I think I'm handling this. I think I'm okay. I think I'm enjoying myself. I didn't give myself permission a long time to enjoy myself because I was so fixated on the naps and the sleep and is she feeding well? And, you know, I had a lot of, I don't know, I put a lot of pressure on myself about the breastfeeding, which was weird because I went in to give birth to my baby with no idea on how I would feed her. But I guess like my experience with my midwives was there was a lot of pressure to breastfeed, which then turned into when I didn't enjoy it, I felt like there was no way that I could stop.
Yeah.
And I think that put a lot of pressure on myself. So when I eventually decided to give a bottle of formula here or there and just like let myself breathe, I slowly moved out of that phase of feeling like this is so hard. And I started to go, well, this is what I wanted and I'm going to give myself permission to enjoy it.
Yeah, giving yourself some space to not necessarily follow the rule books. How did you feel about paid work at that time when motherhood was feeling a bit challenging? Because I think another thing that can be brought up is we're so excited to get on parental leave. And then once you're there, it can be jarring in some ways. In some ways, we'd love to eject ourselves for a few hours and go back to work where it's easy and there's a process and we know what we're doing. Did you have any of those feelings or emotions?
Yeah, I definitely, when I was in the trenches of newborn life, thought to myself, I can't believe what I used to think was difficult about my job. And that's only something that can come with hindsight. Like with my job, being a TV news reporter, you're often in uncomfortable situations. You know, you might be approaching someone who's having the worst day of their life, or even something as minimal as you might be standing at Flinders Street Station and you need to hit up people and ask them what they think of the latest interest rate hike. You know, it can make you uncomfortable putting yourself out there. That's what I used to think was uncomfortable or hard. And now I'm like, oh, I've raised a small child on no sleep. Yeah. And, you know, like it really puts things in perspective, what you can push yourself to do.
Yes, that's very true. When we think about, I'll take your mind now to how parental leave was actually planned and what played out. How long did you plan to take off work? And then what was the actual reality of that?
So I planned to take maybe 9 months. So because I've been at Channel 7 for almost 10 years, I had quite a few leave entitlements, not just my maternity leave, but also long service leave and annual. So all of that together took about 9 months. And I thought, surely, like by 9 months, I'll be ready to go back. I think the day I popped this baby out, I was like, no. And I'm pretty sure I called work that week. I was still in hospital and I said, I have to take more time off. So that's when I added on my Centrelink time. So I think it took it to just over a year. And then I was fortunate enough that my husband was able to get 4 months total paternal leave. So he took 1 month off with me at the start. And thank God, because he was my rock in all of that. And then he is just wrapping up his 3 months, I think, at the end of this week. So all up, our daughter would have been at home for almost 14 months, which has been really nice.
Oh, wow. And if you think now to when things were starting to feel a little bit more in flow, and then your return to paid work is approaching, how did you feel at that time? I guess we're going back to sort of the conversation that we were having at the start, but I'd love to hear a little bit more about how that played out and how you actually get ready to present again, because that's a very big thing that you go out and do every day.
Yeah, it uses a different part of your brain that I hadn't used in 12 months. You know, my brain was thinking, calculating wake windows. What is she eating? When was her last nappy change? Like, I remember trying to lecture my husband about the mental load that I felt like I had all the time, which was awesome, by the way, when he went on paternity leave. So I was like, see, you get it, which he really does. But yeah, like as a TV news reporter, I primarily cover court cases that require sitting in a courtroom, say for a murder trial, and listening for 4 or 5 hours and then trying to dissect what is important to our audience. How can I translate it into a way that people can understand? It just uses a whole nother part of my brain, which is exciting for me to be able to use, but I'm not going to say it just came to me like that. Like my first day of work, I found it hard. I was sitting there. Normally I can bash out a script in 10 minutes. This time I was like, where are my words and how am I, you know, going to do this? So it's definitely taken a couple of weeks to get back into the swing of things. So I do love using that part of my brain now. Like it's so good to have these two parts of me.
You mentioned that you'd been there for nearly a decade, which means that I imagine you felt quite comfortable in your work environment. If we think back to that idea of where have my words gone, I can't do this as quickly as I thought I could or that I used to be able to. Did you feel a sense of imposter syndrome returning to work? What did that actually feel like in terms of you feeling up to the job?
Yeah, I don't know if I felt imposter. If I've ever felt imposter syndrome, it's actually in being a mum. I feel like because I've done my job for 10 years, even if I found it a little bit hard at the start, I knew that I would get back there because I've done it for so long. And I remember the first day that I came back to work and I was finding it really hard, the subject matter of the story I was covering and just trying to like get my head back in the game. I was able to message people in my newsroom who are mums and just say, can I just let you know, I am struggling today. And they would be like, oh, I get it. And that would just spur me on to get through the rest of the day. And I was happy with what I ended up producing on my first day back. But the imposter syndrome for me is like walking through life, pretending like I know what the hell I'm doing with this baby that, you know, I'm an only child. I haven't even been around babies. And all of a sudden I am her life support and her everything. So that's where I feel like, do I know what I'm doing?
Yeah, it's amazing that we don't get a little bit of a trial run with hindsight, because it is a wild responsibility that all of a sudden you have. Let's talk about your partner taking parental leave as you're returning to work. I imagine that means that you could just walk out the door and go off to your day. What did that look like? And what do you think he really learned most about what you'd been through?
Yeah, I think having my partner be on paternity leave when I returned to work was the ultimate luxury because, yes, I was able to just walk out the door. I would come home, there'd be food on the table, my baby would be fed and about to go to bed. Like, that has been such a good transitional phase for me. This coming Monday, both of us are returning to work. And I think that is going to feel more of a challenge because there's no one at home 24/7 to go, can you pick up some more nappies? Or, you know, there's not going to be that one person. So yeah, I think I'm really privileged to be able to have entered work the way that I have and actually have 3 months of it with someone at home. In terms of my partner being on paternity leave, yeah, I mean, he's always been quite good with like the cooking and the cleaning and the stuff, but I think something that he only has probably understood where I'm coming from now is when I say that I'm overstimulated. It's so fun to play with your baby at the start and the end of the day, but when you're with them 24/7 and they're crying for something that you don't understand because they don't have words and you're doing that day in, day out, it's hard, you know, like, and I think we're more on the same page now that even though it is just one little baby, they can elicit so many emotions out of you and it can be full on.
I wish I could give that gift to every couple that has a child, is that both people get to take leave because I can't even imagine what it does. What was that return to work like to you in terms of logistically? Did you start with a certain amount of days a week and build up from there?
I was really hoping that I would do something like that. But to be honest, like with my career and where I want to take it, because I report on courts, that is really like a Monday to Friday job. So if I was to come back 1 or 2 days a week, I physically would not be across everything that is going on because you like, every night we compile a diary of everything that's happening in court the next day, or a court case might come up in 2 months' time and you go, I remember what that was about from my notes because I was there. If I was to go back 1 or 2 days, I'm just not going to have that knowledge. And it's legally risky as well to report on courts if you're not there every day. So I decided to go back 4 days off the bat, and that has been a challenge. When I'm at work, I actually really enjoy it, but it's coming home, I feel like on day four, I work Monday to Thursday, I'll come home on a Thursday and I'll be like, oh, I feel like I've barely seen her. If I'm able to make it home to do bath and bed, great. But the nature of TV is you often are doing a live cross on location and it's just not possible to get home for bath and bed. And that's something that I have signed up for being a working mum. But the transition has been hard. And I think it has been harder because I have chosen to work 4 days a week. And that's just something that we have to deal with. And I think as we move into this next phase where we're both working and our daughter's going to start going to daycare, we'll just have to see if that works and if not, where we can try and make adjustments, which I think will be an interesting conversation because it is so often the woman who is being asked to, you know, give or take. And I'm not sure what the right answer is, but I'll just have to see how it goes.
Yeah. So let's talk about a day in the life of your work because yeah, it's not clocking on, walking into the office at 9 a.m. and walking out at 5 p.m. There's so many variables. Talk us through what a day of the life looks like and then when you add the layers of motherhood onto that.
Yeah, so in terms of all TV news jobs, I probably have one that has a little bit of stability, which I'm really grateful for. Before I started reporting on courts and legal issues, I would come into work at 6 or 7 or 8 a.m. and I would have no idea what I was doing. You know, like you are given an assignment and it is your job to turn something that was nothing into a 1.5 minute story with 3 talking heads by the end of the night. And you are just out the door and you just have to hit the ground running. So that kind of reporting, while that was, you know, enthralling for me at a younger age, now that I have a baby, that is quite hard to think, where am I going to be? Am I going to Bendigo? Am I going to be standing on a rooftop tonight? Like, I don't know what I'm doing, where I'm going. So now that I report on courts, I have some semblance of routine where I wake up and I look at all the court websites, the Supreme Court, the county, and I see what kind of cases of note might be happening. And then ideally, I might walk into a courtroom, listen to a case and see, is there enough in this for a story that I can report on? Is there a victim of crime sitting in the courtroom that I could speak to or something like that? But it often doesn't go that way. Sometimes you go into court and the case has been adjourned. Or sometimes I go into court and my boss will call and say, there's a building on fire, you have to go to this. So that's something I have to accept with this job, that I never truly know when things are going to be done, but I try my best to sort of start the day with a plan.
And how independent is it? I imagine a lot of the times you're sort of working on your own and leading it yourself, but then there's camera operators, there's working with producers and editors, there's a manager that I'm sure is sort of overseeing, like the chief of staff. So how does that work in terms of what you assign yourself to versus when someone else is getting involved and when you have to navigate like what camera operators are available and all of that stuff? Because that's a lot to think about on top of motherhood.
Yes, it is like a lot of logistics involved in television, as opposed to say if you were a newspaper reporter, you would listen in court and you would write down what you heard and then you would file that story. With TV, it's a matter of, okay, we're doing a court story. What time is the accused going to walk in the door and what door are they going to be at? Because at that point, we need a camera person there. But the camera person has a press conference with the premier in an hour, so how long can I have the camera person? But then I need them back because I need to film my piece to camera. So it's like a constant movable feast of you trying to get your job done while also considering everyone else in the newsroom who are, we're all trying to work with each other and use the same resources. It's something that I love about my job though. Like I love that I never know who I'm working with on any given day. I've obviously been there for so long that I love everyone I work with, but it's no 2 days are the same.
Oh, wow. That's so fascinating. I imagine it's a very exciting workplace. So if I then take you to the recent trip you went on. I think it was the longest you'd been away from your baby and you were covering a pretty full-on story in Fiji, I think it was. Talk to us about firstly getting that story or knowing that you were going to get on an overseas flight and leaving your baby and how you felt about that.
Yeah, so I feel like I had so many emotions going into this and it really was me just feeling like I was split in two different directions. I want to be that mum who is at home with my baby, but then I also feel like there is this other cup that I should be allowed to fill, which is my career aspirations. And with news, when stories break, you have minutes to decide. So this story had broken in Fiji and I had been assigned to try and cover it from Melbourne, which is pretty difficult considering you're not even in the same country. I had said to one of my managers, I think this would be better if we were there. And they said, well, do you think you could go? And I had a couple of seconds to think about it. And I thought, well, my husband is at home on paternity leave. I am in a situation where my baby, you know, is not being breastfed, you know, like I'm not pregnant or unwell or anything. Like maybe this is an opportunity. So I decided to say yes. And then, you know, flights were booked and off we went. And I remember saying to my husband, I think this will all be okay because I should be back in a day or two. Like it'll be fine. Like our daughter won't even notice I'm gone. But, you know, that's news. I ended up being there for almost 6 days. And while my daughter probably didn't even notice I was gone, I was constantly asking for updates while I'm also trying to work the phones and do my story. You know, my husband was sending me videos of my daughter standing up for the first time. And I was like, oh my God, am I going to miss her first steps because I've made this choice? Should I have made this choice? And in the end, I'm very happy with the choice I made because I think this work trip that I did pushed me to work so hard and to push myself out of my own comfort zone because I definitely had feelings of self-doubt and imposter syndrome when I was over there. Like I think in journalism, I look at my colleagues at the network or other networks who work overseas and I just think they are the epitome. So to have the chance to even do it for a week, I thought, can I even do this? Like, am I capable? So to come back and realize that I was capable while also having a baby at home has been really fulfilling. But I'm not going to lie, like it was hard. It was hard thinking about the things that I was missing and hard sort of questioning myself, was this the right thing to do?
Did you have to put yourself almost in the opposite pair of shoes in that if a dad went away on a work trip for a week, we might think it's hard, but no one would really question it. And we question ourselves so much more as mums. Did you have to do any sort of mindset shifts around that and thinking, well, if I was the dad, I'd probably just go off and miss my baby and come back and say, how are you?
Yeah, I was trying to tell myself that, but I guess like my husband and I have a relationship that feels like we try not to base it too much on the gender roles. And I really had empathy for him that by the time I had come back from my work trip, I had worked 11 days straight. So he had been at home for 11 days straight, doing the naps, doing the bedtime. And there was a voice in my head thinking, oh, well, you know, if a man went on a trip, but then I was also like, but he's not just a man. He's like, I get how hard it is because I know our baby and I know that came with its own challenges too. So yeah, it was a lot, I think, for both of us, like hard work for me and also mentally trying to separate, you know, the two people that I'm currently trying to be, the mum and the journalist, but then also hard for him because it is hard to solo parent without a break. And I totally acknowledge that.
Yeah, 11 days of solo parenting, that is a lot. So I guess the guilt can be multi-layered in these things.
Yeah.
When you think to Monday, when you're both going to be working at a near or full-time capacity, I imagine, what does the plan look like from there? Do you have to, is it like a Sunday meeting where you go through who's doing the drop-offs and pickups? Is there any family help outside of the daycare that your baby will be going to? What does it look like?
So we start daycare next week. We actually have had a couple of days of orientation. We had one today as well, but you know, my little baby, she lasted an hour and then she just needed to go, and that's fine. We forgive her. So I think next week will be interesting, and I am planning to just be on call. I obviously want to do the best job I can at work, but she comes first. And if she's feeling uncomfortable or scared, I think that's totally fair considering she spent so much time at home with just us. It must be like such a big transition. She's not talking. She's not walking yet. Like, I'm just trying to put myself in her little sparkly shoes and think about how she must be feeling. In terms of family help, like, we do have both sets of grandparents, but they are all a fair bit older. So they love to come over and play with her, but they are not at the point where they would look after her on their own. So it's nice to have visits. And my mum in particular, like, she comes over maybe once a week and she'll like make beautiful Malaysian food and like look after us and show us love in so many other ways. But in terms of like having someone that can stay with our daughter, put her to sleep, stay overnight with her, it's just me and my husband. And sometimes that feels like a lot, but then it's also a privilege, isn't it, that I have a partner to do this with and that I have a baby that I so badly wanted. So sometimes it's about the mindset shift instead of trying to compare myself to people who have more help.
Yeah. How about boundaries? Because as we've learned, your job is multicolored, ever-changing. When it comes to next week, when you do want to be a bit more on call, what does that look like in terms of, are you having conversations with your managers about, this is a big week for me, I may have to pull back, or how does that look?
Yeah, I actually have it in my head that I may have to tell them on Monday, my daughter is starting daycare and I think I might need to step out, you know, if it's not working out. Because she does have this week to have a few more goes at it, I just want to give it a go and see how we go. Because yeah, there is that part of me that even though I have been in the workplace for so long, you do have this guilt that you don't want to show up as a mum that always has the problem. You know, you want to sort of look like you're doing it all and everything's seamless. Like, I remember before I had a child, I would think, oh, these mums are always taking time off. And now I totally get it. But I guess I just want to reserve those favors. Well, I guess it's not a favor, but do you know what I mean? Like,
yes,
I just want to make sure that I am asking for the days that are truly needed. So I'm going to give it until next week. And if that happens, then I'll tell them. But I just don't want to preempt me being an issue if it's not necessary. Yeah. I think even the language I'm using right now is probably not the best language, because it's not an issue that we've got
it
children.
It speaks to the problem though, isn't it? It speaks to how we feel about navigating it. It's so challenging.
Yeah.
You sound very pragmatic, but also very empathetic. So I'm sure this next week does feel like a bit of an emotional hurdle. And as it should, it's a really big change for everyone involved. And I've been through it too. How do you talk to yourself or sort of mother yourself, or I guess acknowledge that it is a challenge and look after yourself? Because as you're saying, you want to be both in career and in motherhood, and I'm the same. And sometimes it feels impossible to reconcile wanting those two things. And I still question why I ever want to be away from my baby, but I need it. So I guess that's a really long way of asking how you accept yourself and your ambitions and how they sit alongside motherhood.
Girl, I'm going to have to get back to you on that one, because I feel so guilty sometimes. Like, even in this conversation, I worry about being perceived as someone who cares too much about my career and not enough about my baby. You know, like, I have definitely been in phases of my maternity leave where I've thought, like, I could never leave this baby even for a second. And how can anyone? And then you get to a point where you're like, hang on, I am allowed to be another person. And I was another person for 31 years before this baby came along. But I'm definitely a work in progress when it comes to that. Like, I'm not great with like the positive self-talk. Like, I often guilt myself about wanting to try and do both.
Yeah. And is there any conversations you had to have? I'm thinking for anyone that's had that, I hate that we use the word luxury because it shouldn't be, but that luxury of the secondary caregiver having the ability to take some paid parental leave. I'm wondering if there's any shifts or areas of communication that you've really had to focus on of this leap that you're now taking, because as you say, there's been one or the other looking after your baby for this period of time. And there is a shift occurring. So is there anything or any tips that you sort of have, or maybe again, it's a work in progress of how you're approaching both of you navigating this change?
Yeah, I feel like we are just wading into the unknown at the moment. Like we haven't even thought about who's going to get home first, who's going to make dinner, who's going to fold all the laundry, because for the last year and a bit, someone has always been home. So I feel like it's going to be a challenge for sure. I think I have been trying to tell myself, because I do have a little bit of guilt about sending my daughter to daycare when she's only done a few orientations, but she clearly is not, you know, taking to it immediately. And I do have some guilt surrounding that. And I wish that I could just stay at home and look after her 24/7, because maybe that's what would make her initially feel the most comfortable. So I am trying to tell myself, like, everyone has their own version of a village. And for our family situation, while we do have four loving grandparents, they're not in the position where they can take her. So if that's the case, the next best thing is a loving group of educators. And the educators that I've met at our center, like, I couldn't be happier with them. So I think I need to let myself lean into the idea that they're now our village as well. And that's okay. Yeah.
Speaking of village and grandparents, I've loved seeing some of the videos you've put up about your mum. And I'm wondering what you've learned from her and the way she cares for you, because it seems like her culture, which I think you said is Malaysian, really feeds into, I guess, honouring that village and cooking for each other and really looking after each other. So I'd love to hear more about the way she cares for you and what you've learned from her.
Yeah, I think like in Asian culture particularly, it's all about food and making sure you've eaten. And I think when I came back from the hospital, my mum had made me a lot of like confinement meals and teas and soups that she thought would be nourishing for me. And like, I didn't like them all, I'm not going to lie, but I really appreciated that she went to all the effort to try and do things that she would know would benefit me. I really have enjoyed like making videos and doing stuff on social media in the last year or so. And I think probably the favorite video I've ever made is the one of my mum, which is just like a little ode to, yeah, it's just a little ode to the things that she does for us. And I feel like I actually made it out of a place where I was trying to, again, shift my mindset instead of thinking about all the help that I wish that I had. I wish I had, you know, someone that I could drop my baby off to and have a night off or something. It's more like, I have this amazing mum who comes over and she puts so much effort in and she brings this food and she just loves on me and my daughter so much. Like, I was like, I'm going to make this for myself, you know, and for her so that she knows. But a lot of other people liked it, which was awesome. Like, she was just blown away that that many people saw it. I think it has like 1.3 million views or something. So she's so stoked. Beautiful. Yeah. But it really came from a place of like me trying to remind myself, like, I'm really lucky with what I have in my personal family situation.
Embracing the good parts. And then if I think of another part of our village is our friends. And you seem to have quite a few really close friends that are also journalists and reporters who are navigating maternity leave and new motherhood. And then I'm sure there's a variety of friends out there in different fields. What has friendship meant to you during this phase of your life?
It has meant everything. I'm such an advocate for like my female friendships. I just could not live without my girlfriends. And it's funny, like, I went to an all-girls school and I have a lot of friends from that phase in my life. It's funny the people that you end up becoming close with in this motherhood journey. I've always had girlfriends that I love spending time with, but the ones that I've really connected with, I'm surprised by, you know, because we just ended up going through challenges that neither of us would have ever even known what they were before we had children.
Yeah.
Who knew that in the middle of the night you'd be texting someone from school going, I think I have mastitis. Like, what's that? Like, what are we doing here? You know, like, yeah. And it brings this bond together, which has just been absolutely amazing. And particularly for a couple of my friends who also have gone through infertility struggles, it has just been like the most amazing way to finish off that really challenging point of our life, to move the group convo from when's your transfer, when's your blood test, to like, oh, how's sleep going? Or, you know, like there's challenges, but it's just been like a really nice way to round it out.
Yeah. And I think, unfortunately, us mums feel so much guilt for wanting things outside of motherhood. So I think it's nice to remind ourselves of why we do what we do. So I'd love to hear about, what are the really great bits about returning to paid work? What are you loving doing? What's making you go, oh, this is worth it because I am happier for it and that's better for my baby?
Yeah. You know what? I feel like I'm one of those people who has made my entire personality being a mum. Going to work reminds me that there are other parts of me, and there are lots of people who don't want to talk about babies and feeding and breastfeeding, and that's a good thing. So it is so good just to socialize with like a different group of people. In journalism, you never know who you're going to meet on a daily basis, and it just broadens my worldview, which has been quite small and focused on a few things for the last year. So I really enjoy that. On a lighter note, I just like eating my lunch on my own. Oh my God, it's heaven. So good.
Like, and not rushing. Like, I mean, you're probably still rushing, but it's not the rush of got to get back to my baby or they're about to wake up from a nap. Like, and your body acts as though you're about to get attacked by a lion. Like, that's how it feels.
Yes. I'm in fight or flight. When my baby's having a nap, I'm like, here are the 50 things I need to do, plus I need to eat. And if I eat in front of her, she's going to be whinging the whole time. And I don't want to share my food with her. She's already eaten. So going to work and having my lunch and driving to work and listening to an audiobook, like I'm not listening to the Wiggles. I'm listening to something that I want to listen to. I've really enjoyed that. And just the sense of accomplishment, I guess, like everyone has their own box to tick when they're at work or something that makes them feel good. But, you know, for me, like live TV, like doing a live cross or nailing an interview or writing a really good opening line to a story, those are things that use my brain in a way that just, that it was not active in my maternity leave, you know? So it feels good to be able to do something that I used to do and do it well.
If there was anyone listening that's in a similar field to you that's about to navigate this whole journey, what would be your best piece of advice if you looked back on your journey so far?
I think just, and I guess this could apply to people in all kinds of industries, but in journalism, it's so fast paced. You know, you're always rushing. Just slow down and just like live in the moment that you're in. I think I was so obsessed with the next phase and the next phase and getting it right that sometimes I just didn't appreciate, for example, the contact naps or the waking up in the middle of the night to feed. Now, when I look back, that wasn't that bad, giving her a midnight feed. That was quite nice. But I think in those early newborn days, I was like, okay, I've got to get to the next step because the next step is that she sleeps through the night and the next step is that she does this. And it's like, it goes so fast. So just give yourself more permission to like breathe and like be in that phase because it will pass.
Yeah. That makes me feel more relaxed just hearing you say that. If you look forward to the year ahead, what are you most excited about?
Look, a couple things. Motherhood wise, I'm excited to see my daughter get into daycare because like I've just taken her to orientation this morning and it has made me feel a bit sad that she hasn't enjoyed herself for longer than an hour. Like she was okay. She was having fun, but then they put some sunscreen on her and maybe, you know, she's a diva. She's like, don't touch me. So we had to go and that's fine. But I think I'm looking forward to watching her come out of her shell and actually enjoy being around other children and other adults. Like I think that will bring me so much peace to know that she's okay. Career-wise, there's a lot of big high-profile court cases coming up in Victoria that I'm feeling really excited about covering and just really delving into different ways of covering news stories. When I started this job 10 years ago, there was three ways to cover a story really, radio, TV or print. Now it's all about social media and TikToks and reels and podcasts and like I'm excited to jump into all of those areas in a year that is like big for court cases in Victoria. So don't know how I'm going to juggle it all, but I think this year is going to be really good, especially, you know, I didn't have the best postpartum newborn phase. I feel like each year that I'm a parent, I'm enjoying it more. So I think 2025, like, I'm feeling really positive about.
Yeah. What a fascinating look at making work work as a mum. It's amazing what you do. If people want to find your work online, where should they go?
So I'm on everything just as my full name, Estelle Griepink, G-R-I-E-P-I-N-K. If you follow me on socials, I don't really know if I can promise you what you're going to get. You might get like a Delulu mum reel and then next minute it's like a hardcore news story, but like all my stuff is there. So yeah.
Thanks so much for sharing your story.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Ready or Not. If you liked the show, please tell your friends, subscribe, or write a review. You can also find us on Instagram at readyornot.pod. That's it for today. We'll see you next time.